Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, welcome to the penultimate episode of Rahalastapa. Stop saying that, you people over there, Series 9. Series 10 should hopefully just carry on more or less straight away as soon as this is over. We start recording them on October the 3rd at the Leicester Square Theatre. My very first guest is Armando Iannucci, and that show is nearly sold out already. And there's plenty more very exciting guests coming up that I will announce very soon. So do buy tickets to that. If you want to see them carrying on being filmed, they'll come out on audio for free, whatever, then we do need you to help us with the Kickstarter. Go to www.gofasterstripe.com/Kickstarter and make any contribution. However small, that will still help us. If it's really big, that will help us more. We're getting close, but there's still quite a long way to go. It's certainly not a definite thing. So if you like those videos, then please give some money. If it doesn't happen, we'll just have to stop making the videos. So it's not the end of the world. We'll still make the audios. But if you like the videos, then carry on. Also, we have filmed Series 9 and we don't have any money for that at the moment. So it will put us in a bit of a hole, but we'll find a way out. We're resilient and resourceful. If you pay more than £15, there's lots of other rewards. One of the rewards is access to a secret channel with all the backstage interviews from Series 9 and Series 10. So, for example, I asked Tim Minchin this.
It's hard, though, to choose one, isn't it?
You're going to ask me an emergency question now?
Yeah, just because it's nice for the people. If you had to marry one of the Muppets, which of the Muppets would you marry?
I wonder how he responded. You'll never know. And look, here's some of the other questions that were asked backstage.
Would you prefer to have a tit that dispenses talcum powder or a finger that can travel through time? If you had to choose between having a hand made out of ham or an armpit that dispenses sun cream, which of those two things would you choose? It's still your hand, but it's made of ham, and you can
eat it. I've already got the answer. Okay. As soon as you finish that question.
Okay.
But you have to get the channel to see what happened. We do 5-minute interviews backstage. They usually go up on the secret monthly badge channel. And also you will get access to an unbleeped version of the Royal Chat with Sophie Hagen. So go www.gofasterstripe.com/Kickstarter and give us some money if you can before the end of September. That would be terrific. That's my daughter there crying in the background. She's upset that it isn't certainly going to happen. All right, bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who genuinely passed Lee Ryan from Blue in Shepherd's Bush just a few minutes ago. That's so exciting. Come on. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Hello! Welcome to the the penultimate Rich Hanks Leicester Square Theatre podcast of the series. I did generally pass Lee Ryan from Blue. I don't know what he was doing in Shepherd's Bush. He was on the phone, so I couldn't talk to him. But looking at him, I think he was the kind of guy who would call this for a Leicester. So I mean, he's pretty cool, right? Lee Ryan, if there's a cool one from Blue, it's probably Duncan, isn't it? Is that his name? I've just come from a festival over the weekend. I was performing at Nostock Festival near Hereford. It's a long fucking way away, Hereford. I don't know why I did this gig and had to drive there and drive back on the same day. Tom Parry is coming up. That's giving that away. He was also on just before me. But I had the best heckle I've ever had, I think. It's weird doing festival gigs because I don't have a family set, and they're often just families in the tents at festivals, and it was a mixture of extremely stoned people and drunk people and people on psychedelic drugs and tiny children, so that's quite a tough audience to play to. So I've got one kid's joke, which is, what's brown and taps at the window? A poo on stilts. There's a little like 3 or 4 year old kid in the front row. He found that quite funny because it had the word poo in it. Then I thought, oh, I've got another one. Then I realised I didn't have another one. And as you'll know, if you've listened to this podcast before, my other kind of childlike joke is, where does a bird leave its sexual organs when it goes to a nightclub? Not very child friendly, I realised. It sounds like it's going to be a kid's joke, but and then the answer is in the cloaca room. And I then said that you need to know, I said to the kid, you need to know that a bird pisses and shits through the same hole, and it's called a cloaca, and that has sex with it as well. And also, you know, you're a three-year-old kid, you probably don't really know what a cloakroom is. So it doesn't work on any level. And I said to him, have you got a cloak? Where do you leave your cloak? And the little kid said to me, in my mummy's bedroom, which I think is... Oh, it went down better on the night. So I thought that was... I thought just quick as a whip coming back with that. And then later on I asked him, who do you prefer, me or Mr. Tumble? And he came straight back, Mr. Tumble. He didn't even have to think about it. So I threw some water over myself and once again maligned, made scurrilous comments about not being left in a room alone with Justin from Justin's house. So that was... who I'd love to get as a guest on this, but, you know, if he listens to this, he's going to go, well, I'm not coming on that. He's horrible to me. The Labour Party, they've done this brilliant idea of putting someone in charge who is kind of popular with members but the party don't like. It's quite a clever idea because they keep on having leadership elections and then charging people to take part in them. And generally they charge 25 quid this time and they've raised like something like 5 million quid from everyone giving £25. So I thought maybe for the next series of I would do that as well. You know, we could just try and bring in some incumbent, someone like Jack Whitehall would be good, someone that would appeal to the masses, because the person we have now is good at doing this, and he's you know, his heart's in the right place, and the people who come to see it like him. But, you know, he's never going to get this show onto a national stage, is he, and onto TV. So if we get Jack Whitehall or, you know, David Mitchell or someone like that in. So we might have a vote, but basically I think it's worth it. I don't mind not doing it anymore if I get the 4 million quid. Which I think, you know, if I was Jeremy Corbyn, I'd go, let's have one more leadership election. If you give me and that John McDonnell bloke a million quid each and Diane Abbott a million quid, we'll all fuck off. That's what I would do. And I'd deliberately make the Labour Party unelectable. Oh, this kind of might be what he has done. So that is good. I should mention, as it occurs to me, he's coming back. We've been doing some pre-filming as we're talking now, but it's coming with the recordings are in September and then monthly, and hopefully it'll be out as a big lump in 2017. You can really help us do more of those if you come and see us live with that. We're at the Leicester Square Theatre. Check my website, richhang.com/gigs. If we can fill those, then we can afford to do like another 12 days filming, so there'll be more sketches. So that's what we'll use your door money for if you want to come and see that. That's just a little advert that I've cunningly put into the podcast for all the people who try and fast forward through the first bit. They thought, oh, how we got rid of the advert at the front, bad luck. Got it in anyway. Let's introduce our guest, because he's actually off to do another gig today. He's very kind to come along, and despite doing another gig, he's fantastic. It's fantastic. Both the guests we've got for these last two shows are top draw. I won't have anyone say any differently. He is probably best known from his, I think, writing work on Great Movie Mistakes 2, the sequel, which It's a controversial show because it has made its own mistake, its own goof, was that it had multiple appearance of a woman extra with a backpack appearing in Spider-Man had already been used in Great Movie Mistakes 1. So that's why we all remember that. Which, you know, if you're going to do a show about mistakes, don't then make a mistake yourself. That's the first rule of taking the piss out of people who make mistakes. Anyway, here he is. He's the man behind that, and that's why we've all come here to see him. It's Tom Parry, ladies and gentlemen. Great Movie Mistakes 2, the sequel. Welcome.
Hello.
There he is. Woo!
Am I the least known person you've had on this podcast?
Oh, no, we've had some dross on that. As I said, we had Matthew Crosby, who you know.
Yes.
On, and... it was him and Nish Kumar, and honestly, they got hardly anyone in. So you can go.
This is a big.
There's 300 people in here to see you. So you can go to see him at the gig you're doing with him now.
Tell him.
And say three times more people wanted to see me than you.
Big cheer if you're here to see Tom Parry. That's not true. You flatterers.
Big cheer if you're here to see Peter Bainham. You beat Peter Bainham, to be fair, he hadn't really been announced. Let's talk about the Great Movie Mistakes.
We did three of those.
Were you in them as well? No, just wrote them.
Yeah, and they'd send us a DVD of about 3 hours of the most mundane, tiny little, like if you pause it here, you could see the shadow of the cameraman, and then you'd have to write a joke for every single one of them.
Yeah,
and it was Christmas money. We got like a little bit of money at Christmas, but oh, it was hard. It was a real slog.
Did you notice that the woman in the backpack in Spider-Man was in both?
Is
one
that
and two?
Is that genuinely true?
Well, according to IMDb, that's a goof. That's one of the goofs on the IMDb website.
Yeah, we meant that. That was an Easter, it was an Easter egg. And then in the end, Robert Webb told us, he said to the producers that he wanted people, what was the phrase he used? Better schooled to write for them. Oxbridge, he wanted Oxbridge writers.
Wow.
So we got bumped. And then two series later, we went back as hosts, which was a really depressing job. Please don't watch the Movie Mistakes series.
I did watch. It's not good. I do remember saying I did talk to Robert Webb when we had him on about it.
Did he mention us?
I can't remember. I think he might have said there was some terrible writers on it. Mm. But when he tried to pass the buck, but I remember seeing it. It was no Dennis Norden. Let's say
no. Real shame. And it's always on. It's like it's the thing I've done. It's the most I've ever been on telly.
Yeah.
Is doing the Movie Mistakes. It's a really bleak legacy, isn't it?
So it genuinely is what you're best known for.
No, I was in... I did one scene in the second series of Miranda.
Oh, yes.
And that's like... People stop me in the streets and say, "Are you the bed salesman from Miranda?" And it's like and it was literally like a 2-minute scene.
Yeah,
and I think that's the most famous I'll ever be.
Right. Oh, and, you know, there might be.
No,
there might be more than that.
Well, there's this. There's there now.
There's this. People will recognise you from this. They'll recognise your voice as you're walking along.
Oh, that's my. Without meaning to brag.
Yeah.
Last year, I was the voice of an Oral-B advert.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Close your eyes for a second, right? Everyone close your eyes. Remember this voice? GoPro with Oral-B Pro Expert. That was me, guys. So, Movie Mistakes.
Did you get any free toothbrushes?
No. And I've got terrible teeth as well.
That's probably why it's just a voiceover.
Yeah. And the woman, like, I showed up and I started talking and she said, the woman from Oral-B who I hadn't met before said, "Are you from Wolverhampton?" Like, disgusted. And I was like, "Yeah?" She was like, "Oh." And went away and had a word with the producer. The producer came back and said, "Can you hide your accent?" And I was like, "Yeah, it's fine."
Why did they book you?
GoPro. GoPro with Oral-B Pro Expert. Be much better.
Are you ever mistaken for Tom Parry, the Porth Maddock estate agent? Who is the number one hit on Twitter when you Google... Yeah.
Tom Parry, and has tomparry.co.uk.
Yeah, and he's got Mid Wales sewn up. He really has. My family go on holiday to Mid Wales, so I get lots of pictures of people going, oh, is this your job? No.
No.
I write on movie mistakes. How many times do I have to tell you?
Oh, your phone was a quite a Welsh name, though, Tom Parry.
Tom Parry, yeah, I'm half Welsh.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then when I was about 18, I pretentiously wanted to spell my name the Welsh way, which is T-O-M-O-S.
Oh, yeah.
So that's, you know, like how you can tell how pretentious you were as a kid because of your email address is. So that's my email address is Parry Thomas, spelled T-O-M-O-S. Ah. And that was going to be my actor name when I was going to be an actor.
Before. Are you ever mistaken for Sir Thomas Parry, the comptroller to the household of Elizabeth I?
No. He sounds important, though.
He died of mere ill humour.
Really?
That's mere what it says. He was quite unpopular in court, and he died of being grumpy, I think is what they're saying.
Oh, no. Oh.
He had a son called Tom Parry as well.
Strong. Was he more fun?
He was an MP, I think, or like a Member of Parliament for... Well, it's the same thing, isn't it? But he's either an MP or a Member of Parliament.
No, one of
those. I don't think they had, you know, whatever the Parliament was in those days.
A military policeman.
Yeah, it could have been that. Yeah. For St Albans. So, you know, there you go.
Wow.
That's all I've got on you, this. That's all I've got on you. There's quite a few. There's a footballer. When you look up videos for Tom Parry,
yeah,
they're all of the footballer Tom Parry.
None of me.
Winning 4-1 against Kidderminster or something.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. My dad played for Kidderminster Harriers.
Did he?
And then the end of that story.
So, let's talk about you.
Oh, who's the most famous Richard Herring?
I think it's me. But there's a guy who writes books. He wrote a book called something about The Solitude on the Road, Richard Herring. There's a guy.
Is that about you?
No. Some people buy it thinking it's by, you know, it comes up on Richard Herring.
It sounds like it could be a
Richard
Herring.
And there's a Richard Herring who works in. Who's got the Richard Herring Twitter thing, I think.
Oh, he beat you to it.
I think he did, but he works in computers somewhere. Someone told me they'd met him and he was a dick. So, you know, that's... I can't corroborate that, but it probably is. So I think I'm the best one.
Okay.
I think
congratulations.
I'm the best one. Thank you. Well, you were on at Nostock as well. How did you... Did you have a nice time over the weekend in Hereford?
Yeah. I mean, comedy at music festivals is always a little bit... You're performing to people who've gone a bit too hard and need shade.
Yeah.
So you just kind of just have to... You know, you just feel like your job is not to scare them too much. Like, Nostock was a heavy festival, it seemed.
It was.
Yeah, I felt like such a square.
Yeah, well, that was like, my problem. Yeah. I literally just arrived and I was wearing a T-shirt.
Yeah. It's the kind of festival where, like, the backstage staff are like, do you want any MDMA before you go on? And you're like, no, thanks. Just have a can of
Did
Coke.
You get a dressing room? Did you get your
no.
Room?
Did you not? There was a caravan and a teepee. Did you get one of those?
I got a special dressing room. It's actually nicer than most dressing rooms I've had in theatres. I was next door to some guy who came up and chucked, but I don't know anything about music. He came, a very nice young man came up with a beard and said, hello, I like your work, and I'm on, what time are you on? And I said, I was on at the same time as him, and I said, oh, what's your band? He said, well, I can't remember.
Mumford and Sons.
Might have been. And I said, oh, well, good luck. And then I said, I don't really like knowing anything about music. He said, nor do we, it's fine. And then... at the end, there was like a special bit with a fence behind it. And there was like these big, like, looking like, I
the
guess they were.
Guys.
Well, they looked like LA rappers or something like that.
Dressy Five?
It might have been.
There you go.
So they look scary. I was going to go, hello to them. Hello, I'm on as well.
Hello, Dressy Five.
I don't know enough about music. But I followed Bob Slayer.
Right.
Who is a brilliant festival act.
Yeah.
Because he basically looks insane, is drunk and off his face all the time anyway.
That's it.
And what his act, which I think worked very well, was to read The Hungry Caterpillar whilst picking a bloke out of the audience to be The Hungry Caterpillar.
Yeah, that's it, is he? And he probably had the munchies anyway. Probably good timing
for
him.
And dressing him in a big green sleeping bag.
There you go.
And then making him eat all the things.
Yeah, great. Yeah. That's it. That's it.
I mean, you can't. So I came and went, oh, hello, it's me. I've got some jokes.
Oh, yeah,
and then
not jokes.
With all these, do you have a kid-friendly act?
I accidentally grinded at a child in the front row. Very early on, and it was very tough to get the 20 or so people there back on board. Kind of said, I was talking about like chirpsing when you, you know, like when you text flirting.
Yeah.
And I was like, I have a bit on chirps. And I was like, oh, you like to chirps, don't you? And I was like, you like chirpsing, don't you, fella? And it was like he was five. And like his face was there and his mom kind of took him out after a couple of minutes. And it was hard to get back from that.
I sort of blame them. I mean, it's any parent who brings... I mean, I came on and said, I really don't have any kids' jokes, you know. And then the other parents going, hooray! And then it was got quite nasty. And then some people were leaving at the end.
Yeah.
And looking quite angry. And I said, well, you know, I did warn you. And said, oh, I think they were joking. But yeah. I said... You know, is it me that's bad or the kind of parent who would bring their children to this?
That's it, why are the kids there?
The evil.
We had a great... Pappy's did this children's music festival. It's called Deer Shed Up York. It's designed for families, and so we were there. We had a child-friendly set. And the parents all stand around the outside of the marquee, and the front is all the kids. They're all about seven. So I came out and I said, you're right, kids, I'm going to crowd surf, just as a joke. Because they went, whoa, pretended to jump on them. And they went, yeah. So we did an hour. So all the way through, I was going, I'm going to crowd surf. So right at the very end, the show had gone really well. And I sat on the end of the stage and went, I'm going to crowd surf now, kids. And I kept my bum on the side of the stage and kind of leant back to pretend I was going to crowd surf. And Crosby and Clarkey misread what I was doing and thought, he's going to crowd surf? So they pushed me out, right, onto a sea of, like, seven-year-olds, right? And they bore me up for about 3 seconds. It's like, it's this glorious moment. I felt like Gulliver. It was like, whoa, this is going to work. And then suddenly they just buckled and I just went bang, just, like, down on these kids. And one of them was stuck under my arse. And I had a radio mic on. And this kid just started going, yeah! It was like, but the kids who were like 3 or so meters away just thought something cool was happening and came forward like a crazy. It's like this nightmare. They're all shouting, get back! And like Charlie was going, yeah! These kids were just going, and the dads had to like wade in.
Wow.
And throw the kids around. It was like Saving Private Ryan. It was horrible.
Do you think if you'd killed like 3 or 4 of those kids that Pappas would have been able to continue as a
I was genuinely... And I got back to the stage. I went backstage and I was like, shit, we've really hurt that kid. Like, he was really crying. And in my head, I was like, we could be sued here. But like, because it was in Yorkshire, like, the dad came back with the son and went, this is Charlie. Sorry he was crying. He's a soft shite. Genuinely. He's a soft shite. Come on, lad, let's go and watch I Am Clute. And off they went. I was thinking if that had been fucking St Albans, it would have been like, you've hurt Tarquin. Oh, thank God it was up north. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cool. Tough audience, kids.
They are. Well, it's difficult to know how to... Because yeah. I'm so rude. But then, I won this kid round by doing some, you know, by nicking some of Mr Tumble's acts.
There you go.
So, you know, there's something in it. In, like, being a strange old man.
Tumble's a millionaire, isn't he?
I would have thought so, yeah. He said, I just noticed on the tube, he's playing... he's in the Railway Children playing, you know, what, the Bernard Cribbins part. Yeah. So he's branching out. He's really good.
I had a chat with my mum about him, literally, yesterday. Because my mum said... Because I'm trying to write some sketches for a kid's sketch show. My mum said, oh, Tom, you could be like Mr Tumble. I do hope he's nice. And then my dad, who's a head teacher, said, I heard he went to Tetnall Wood for the summer fair, and he was short with some of the staff. And my mum said, such a shame. And it was like, I watched, just like, in a matter of 5 seconds, the guy's entire reputation just be thrown away. I was like, Mum, he might have been having a tough day. No. Why would he do that, Tom? Why? Why can't he just be nice? And it was like, that's
it's
it,
like
though.
It's like a superstar, but I was thinking how difficult it must be for him doing anything. He's got his own family, I think, I'm right in saying. So, like, you know, I went to a dance class with my daughter the other day, and I kind of thought, God, if you were Mr. Tumble, and you came here, all the kids would be going,
Tumble!
So you wouldn't be able to do anything, like any activity.
24-7, he gets that.
And so if you're walking down the street just all the time... Yeah.
So he only hangs out in strip clubs, is that why?
Maybe he does. I mean, he looks short of patience on the shows, I would say. So.
Yeah.
So, my favourite thing is when he just goes, Mr Tumble, when Justin, it comes out to Justin, he goes, Mr Tumble's funny. He's with the kid and goes, Mr Tumble's funny. Mr Tumble makes us laugh. He does it every time. But he's like indoctrinating
the kids.
It's sort of going, it's the kids don't realise apparently that it's the same person.
Oh my God.
So he's kind of going, yeah, God, he's fun. He makes us laugh. So, yeah, that's how he's managed to get to this stage, just running up to kids. Yeah. Oh, and that other guy, fine.
This guy's great.
Oh, I wish I was him.
And pop on the nose and off he goes. That's a great trick.
He's great. So he does a little sketch show, which is actually not
pretty
bad.
Good.
It's pretty good.
It's where the money is.
Have some kids and you get the lad to watch all this stuff. It's great.
Yeah.
It's mainly what I've talked about in this.
Oh, really?
I'm going to go to the Fur Chester Hotel. You won't know what it is yet.
No.
But it's like the Muppets, but they've invited. I wrote about wanting to have sex with one of the Muppets.
And they invited
in the paper,
you.
And they invited
me. Are going to make this happen?
But they invite me and my family, which is a sort of mixed message. But I'm assuming they'll distract my daughter and wife, and then say go into this room and have sex with Vanilla.
If you,
if that doesn't happen, I'm going to be quite disappointed. It's in Salford. I'm going to go a long way.
It's a long way to go for nothing. If you get a blowjob off a Muppet,
yeah.
Is it technically a hand job? Like what's How do the legalities work on that?
I don't know. So I don't know what, I've been masturbated by a ventriloquist puppet.
Honest?
Yeah.
Really? Have you talked about this before?
Yeah. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you operating?
The comedian Stuart, do you know Stuart Lee?
Yeah.
He used to be on the telly. When we were teenagers, he once tried to cheer me up by masturbating me with a 100-year-old ventriloquist dummy that my great-granddad made. It didn't cheer me up.
Did you finish?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't even get erect, really.
That's a relief. If you had, that might be the end of your working relationship.
It's been difficult. Have some kids. It's good. It's good. That's okay. My message to you. You're getting on a bit.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry. A second ago, I thought it was sex with Muppets.
Yeah.
You
have to have sex with a human being. That's okay. The unpleasant part.
Yeah, get
then
that
you
out
create
of the way.
A human being, but then you get access to all the puppets.
Right. Okay.
And it's not really a crime. Having sex with a puppet, it's not really a crime, is it?
No. Is it?
Unless they're genuinely alive, if it's a living puppet, like Pinocchio.
Would you fuck Pinocchio?
No, he's not really my type. the thing is, like, Pinocchio could be like 100 years old, but he still looks like a little boy. And for to some people, that's
a real moral conundrum. <isn't>
That's the thing.
He said he was old enough. Oh God, it's gotten lucky, hasn't it?
Oh, so I prefer the fluffy ones.
Splinters. Yeah, yeah. When I was a kid, my dad made us a wooden slide.
Oh yeah,
it's like child abuse, really.
Yeah.
Didn't varnish an unvarnished wooden slide. Imagine that's what Pinocchio would leave you feeling like. Oh, he left me feeling like a wooden slide.
All right, we're talking of sex.
Yeah.
With puppets. No, this isn't with puppets. Dirty Britcom Confessions. Have you seen this website?
Yeah. Dirty Britcom Confessions.
Yeah, that you were in under the sketch group.
Section.
First section.
Crosby's obsessed with stuff like that. There's someone who wrote fan fiction about us.
Oh, really?
Like a situation where the three of us got locked in a room and ended up bumming.
Yeah.
And he kind of sent me a link to it at like 2 o'clock in the morning. Said, read this. I was in bed with my girlfriend at the time and she was like, what's that? And I was like, Matthew's just sent me this thing. It was really strange. Really strange.
Did he say, let's make it happen?
I don't know if that's what he was intimating by sending it to me at that time.
Yeah.
It's a strange old business being a sketch group of people, isn't it?
It is. Well, we used to... Because back in the 90s, when I was in Double Act, it was all like fanzine. There was a few odd fanzines of things like that.
Yeah.
People getting off with each other, imagining they were me and Stu.
Really?
There was a thing about two girls getting off with each other, imagining they were me and Stu, which is quite a conflicting thing to think about for many reasons. But they didn't have any, they had no puppets involved, so they didn't know how we operated. They didn't know what our special bond was. As long as it was done through an intermediary.
Yeah, that's
we were happy to
have a bit of separation.
Anyway, these are a couple of yours from Dirty Britcom Confessions.
Really?
Yes. This is Dinner, Then a Threesome with Daniel Kitson and Tom Parry.
God.
Which I quite like. The dinner would be awkward, though, wouldn't it? As you're sitting there eating dinner with Daniel Kitson and this person.
He'd do most of the talking.
But then it's like you're aware where this is leading. It's the fact that there's dinner there first.
What, and then
and then you have to have a threesome with Kitson.
Immediately after.
Yeah, after dinner. You're still a bit full.
The food's not the bit that concerns me, actually, funnily enough.
It's odd to mention it.
Would you be up for a threesome with Daniel? I mean, I imagine you would have to do some stuff with Daniel Kitson for this person to be happy. Would you be happy to do that?
I've never done a threesome.
No.
And I know Daniel, I play football with him.
Yeah.
And I think it might affect our game.
It might make you...
It doesn't affect Premier League football, does it?
It might make you have a better understanding of each other.
Yeah, maybe that's why they do it. Maybe it helps them on the pitch.
You know how someone is going back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, actually, if I kick the ball there...
I know that...
I know his tongue will knock it in.
My cousin had a threesome with a guy once.
Yeah.
And he said... I kept on telling him he was doing it wrong. And he lost his erection. So I finished off. Oh, what a terrible image that is. Imagine him being heckled during... Yeah. So what I wouldn't like is, like, I wouldn't want Kitson being like, oh, you got that wrong. That's my Daniel impression. You're doing that wrong. Don't want that.
Okay.
Have you ever had a threesome?
I have had a threesome. I've written about it in my book, How Not to Grow Up.
Oh, there you go.
People have to buy if they want. It took a long time, and the threesome. I was pretty impressive, but it was. I was 40, so right. It was too late to have a threesome.
Did it improve your understanding on the football field?
I haven't played football since. I might go out. It was with two women I think it wouldn't.
Oh, right.
It wouldn't. It'd be the same, you know.
No. No, that's it.
It may be better at netball.
You're going to advertise your services to netball teams.
Here's another one about you. Turning this around to my disgusting... Those are the days, damn it. Why did I get married? I spent children. What a disaster.
No, you were encouraging me a minute ago.
Threesome. Don't ever get married or have kids. It's too late. It's too late for you to have a threesome. It'd be disgusting if you did it now. I speak as a voice of experience. It's disgraceful. I spend far too much... This isn't me. I spend far too much time thinking about which sketch troupe I want to gangbang me.
Who are these people? Who are these people?
The cheeky boys of Pappy's or the posh boys of the Penny Dreadfuls?
Who
do you think would be a better gangbang...
There was quite a rivalry situation back in the day between... Yeah. This was like 5 years ago now, though. The Penny Dreadfuls aren't really around anymore.
No.
And their fans used to dress up in Victorian costumes.
Yeah.
I would say this, but I think they're much more dependable. Like, I think you're guaranteed a good time with the Penny Dreadfuls. A good, solid gangbang.
Yeah.
Whereas with us, it's hit and miss.
Yeah.
You could have a cracking gangbang, or they could go, oh, that was a bit of a letdown, wasn't it? I think stick with the reliable Penny Dreadfuls.
They're sort of more classically good looking, I think, on the whole.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas we'd be more likely, we'd probably have a bit of an off one and blame the room. Wasn't the right room for a gangbang, and you know, it was a bit close to payday, so there wasn't a lot of people there. We're kind of very good at blaming our circumstances rather than our own performance. So I reckon I wouldn't depend on us for a good gangbang.
They're attractive men, and you do look like a sort of the PG tips chimps, I think, the three of you. I think between the three, you're the least chimp-like one of the three.
Bless you for that.
But look how chimp-like he is. So, you know, that says a lot about the other two.
If I had more hair,
yeah,
I think I'd be well away. The Penny Dreadfuls, I think, are 1.5 good-looking.
Yeah.
And we're probably 1 good-looking. if you take the average of the members.
Yeah, maybe.
I think if you cobbled all of us together, we're about 1 good-looking guy.
If you made you into one, if it's sort of an awful Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah.
Human centipede.
Terrible, terrible
image.
It'd
be quite good to do that.
No, it wouldn't.
If I was a mad scientist, I would do. I'd try and make the work to make it
the more cost effective.
We'll just make you one. Take a sketch group and make you one person who's got the best attributes of the three, either the best looking or the funniest, whichever you want to do. So we'd. I don't know what we'd take. We'd want to get rid of Matthew Crosby's very small.
Yes,
that's all I talked.
He's very small and hairy.
Yeah, so we'd want to get rid of his smallness, but you know he's got nice hair.
Yeah.
And it might just be his hair, I think. Right. Crosby's hair. And actually, the other two of you are weird.
That's it.
Yeah,
so basically, the only Crosby's... thing you like about Pappy's is Crosby's hair.
Yeah, I could just take
what a weird way to insult a guy. That question went a very long route to insult me.
Good, well, that's some nice fun. So let's ask you some emergency questions. Talking to Matthew Crosby, you're the perfect person to answer this emergency question.
Yes.
Who would you prefer to... You know, I've asked a lot of people who don't know who Matthew Crosby is this question. So
yeah, most people don't know
who Matthew Crosby is. It's been quite surreal. But would you? Who would you rather died, Windsor Davis or Matthew Crosby's wife?
Fuck! Fuck it out!
It came out of talking to Matthew Crosby.
What did Crosby say?
I think he had to think quite hard about it.
I think... Windsor Davis, as in the guy from...
It ain't half hot, mum.
It ain't half hot, mum.
Yeah, and whatever the choice will be.
He's had his time, hasn't he? It's got to be Windsor Davis. I don't want to wish death on anyone, but...
I mean, you know, Matthew Crosby's wife is quite young.
And I was kind of... I was best man at their wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So I think as part of my duty... as part of best man, I can't really... wish death on her over...
As she's being executed, she's going, but you were Matthew's best man. Go, but it's Windsor, it's Windsor Davis. Think of
it's a bit warm, isn't it? Windsor Davis?
I don't think Windsor Davis would be killing her. That would, then Windsor Davis would have to go to...
The person who lives has to kill the
person.
So? Yeah.
So you're asking Matthew Crosby's wife to murder Windsor Davis?
Yeah.
I don't think she could cope with that psychologically after that happened.
Is Windsor Davis still active? What was the last thing you saw him do? It might be, you know, he might welcome it. I just think I've had a good innings.
I mean, he's definitely had a good innings.
He is
alive. We've had some debate about whether he's alive, at least at the time of recording.
You should get him on.
Oh yeah, I'd love to Windsor Davis. I will. I'll try and get him on in October.
Would you keep Windsor Davis alive then over Matthew Crosby's wife?
No, I like Matthew Crosby's wife. He's done very well for himself there. She's a very...
Yes. Everyone says to her, that's your husband. She goes, yeah. I go, oh, he's done well.
Yeah, he has done very well. But I mean, yeah. Most men, that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, it's very true.
Most men, you've done well to get a girlfriend, I think. For most men. Well done, for a day or so. Well done. To have disgust. I mean, when you think about it, really, it's horrible, isn't it?
It was horrible.
The human species and everything about it.
Yeah.
And procreation.
Is that why you like puppets so much?
It is.
So much more dependable, aren't they, puppets? Yeah.
They are. I will ask you this question then.
Yes.
Kettle crisps are not as nice as they once were.
What crisps?
Kettle crisps. Kettle crisps are not
as nice.
You think
they've lost their way?
Let me get through the question.
Sorry.
Kettle crisps are not as nice as they once were.
Yeah.
Have I changed or have they? Don't answer. That's not the question.
Still not the question.
No. If you could travel back in time to compare any food of today with an equivalent in the past, part one, what time would you travel to? Part two, what food would you take with you and then sample the version of the other food?
Oh my God.
So I would take kettle crisps back to 2005, whenever they invented.
Yeah.
And then I would eat one from now, and then I would eat one from then, and I go, yes! Or, it was me. So what would you, is there anything, you know, it doesn't have to be in your lifetime, it could be a food historically that you were interested in finding out what it was like in the old days, it could be just something you're fascinated with now. I mean, you know, it's probably something you've never thought about before.
It's probably is.
I'm filling for you, but there's...
It's a hell of a question.
I'm going to wait for an answer. I'm not moving on until I have an answer.
Well, I mean, like, I'm a massive fan of... I mean, like, pizza's my kind of food.
Yeah.
But that hasn't... Pizza's not really gone anywhere, has it?
Oh, I think it has. Because I tried to make this an emergency question. It didn't quite work. But the
Why?
Other day,
it's a cracking question.
This is a different one. The other day, I was walking past Domino's Pizza in the Exford Road, and it was closed down, and they were gutting it, presumably to make it into Domino's Pizza again, but maybe not. And we'd had a Domino's Pizza quite recently, and it was fucking disgusting. And I realised that every time I've had a Domino's Pizza, I've just felt sick and disgusted, and it has no nutritional value, and it's horrible.
Yeah.
And then as I walked past, I said, I'm never having another Domino's Pizza. But it'd taken me a long time to realise... And that was my epiphany.
This was my epiphany.
But they used to be nice.
My epiphany with Domino's was we ordered one. We were filming up in Glasgow. We ordered a massive Domino's order. And they delivered them vertically instead of horizontally. And there's something about the shape of pizza. It gets away with a lot. Because when it's compacted into, like, a mush, which is what it was.
Yeah. It just arrived as a mush.
We were like, this is awful. We can't eat this, can we? We were so hungry. And it was just like, just slumping this mush into my gob. You realise this isn't good stuff.
Yeah.
This is a bad thing. I finished it.
You could travel back to when the pizza was about to be
before it was in
leaving.
The box.
Yeah,
and see if it was as good.
See if it was nicer than.
What a terrible answer to that question! Travel back to the moment that they didn't put my pizza vertically.
Yeah. And see, and then take some of the pizza, the vertical pizza, eat a bit of that.
Yes, that's what I do. I travel back in time. Some would travel back and kill Hitler as a baby. Yeah. Not me.
Well, that isn't on offer. It's interesting because that. It's interesting because that's the first example within it. Usually you're taking back a similar food thing to eat something similar. Yeah. But in this case, you would actually be eating the exact same
pizza.
And then when that met in your stomach, would that destroy the universe?
Yeah.
Because the two things could not exist in
the same
space.
That's exactly what I'd do, yeah. I'd take my vertical pizza back 20 minutes to when it was a horizontal pizza and see what happens. Yeah,
it's a good question, isn't it? Here's another good question.
Don't get me started on calzone.
This is. I've not seen the point of calzone, and so I won't. This is a very good question. This is a very good question, which always leads somewhere amazing.
No pressure.
Have you ever flown a kite?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. See,
my dad.
Let's talk about that for half an hour.
Well, my dad's thing, which is a really weird thing, because we go to the same holiday every year. We go to Devon every year. When I'm not in Edinburgh, I'll go to Devon with my family. My dad loves flying a kite, but not like a stunt kite. He's had the same kite for 20 years, and his thing is length.
Right.
So every year, he buys a new ball of string and adds it to the already existing string and says, let's see how far out it'll go. And he stands there on the beach and he unwinds it and he unwinds it. And it must, like, it looks like it's about half a mile up. Like, it looks incredible.
Yeah.
It takes him about an hour and he lets it out. And then it stays up there and then he's happy. And then he winds it back in. And every year he adds to the string to see if it can get further and further. And that's his thing, his distance.
Yeah.
And it's like, it is the most unspectacular kite flight ever.
I like the way he's doing it in stages. It's not like thinking, I'll just add a shitload on this year.
Oh, no,
it's
no.
Like he's taking it year by year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The last year was successful.
Yeah.
Let's not take any risks.
Yeah.
Let's add just another length of string.
So the responsibility is, when he's got it out there, you go and you take it off him for a bit.
Right.
And you have it for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then he has it back. So the big thing is, like, it can't break on your watch,
right.
You'll probably be cast out of the family.
Start again.
Yeah, well, that's it. And he, you know,
how many years has he got left? That's the question.
Isn't it? Yeah, that's the big question.
Would he ever get
that's
back?
What this question is really about is mortality.
It is. See, I told you it's a good question, wasn't it? We never have got that.
Have you flown a kite?
Yeah.
Is it in your book?
No, it's in the book. I've mentioned it. I have at least three kite-based stories, and no one ever asked you for them. So, you know, that's why it's a good question.
Yeah.
I can't take the credit. That's Ali's randomage. That's one of his random questions from Ali's randomage.
Not a fan of those arseholes who like, skateboard along the beach by kite?
Yeah.
Give it a rest, mate. Not a fan of them.
No.
You know what I mean?
I do, yeah.
It's a bit much, isn't it?
Are you jealous? Slightly jealous of them?
No, I mean, come on. It's a bit much, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if I've really seen this happening.
There's skateboarders along the beach with their kites, and then there's the other bellends who sit on, like, a little seat, and, like, they have pulleys, and they just go along the dunes.
Yeah.
And it's not quite parachuting. It's not quite kiting.
Yeah.
It's this shitty in between. Just think, what are you doing?
Yeah. Have you ever?
Am I alone in that?
I think you know more about kites than most of the audience. I should just do a kite based podcast and then the audience would all know about kites.
The Kite Runner with Richard Herring.
And then this would be a much more exciting moment for the audience.
Yeah.
But I love it, so, you know, fuck them.
Yeah.
I don't care. I don't think any of these people came to see you talk about kites. No. Of the five people that came to see you,
I hope he talks about kites.
Can I ask you this then?
Yes.
Have you ever tried sushi?
Yeah. I'm a vegetarian now, though.
Oh, you?
Yeah. So I can't...
vegetarian sushi.
Yeah, but that's not, like, you know...
Yeah.
It's not... You don't eat sushi for the rice, really, do you? It's like, that's the worst bit. So the fish is kind of, like, the best bit.
Yeah.
And I've stopped eating... kind of removed all joy from my life. I used to love eating meat, love eating fish, and love drinking, and now I don't do any of those things.
What's made this change occur?
I was turning 30,
right,
and I thought, shall I change something in my life? And I chose that.
To the vegetarianism.
Yeah. And I think I enjoyed it because I like talking about it. Yeah. And then and then that gets tired, and then... now, as a matter of pride, I can't go back.
Yeah.
Because all the people who thought I was a bell end talking about it are waiting for me to go back.
Yeah, you can eventually. So that's why I was vegetarian for a long time, and basically until I was 30.
Yeah, I would tell 30.
Yeah, so from like 18 to 30. And, that was one of the things that kept me in there for the last five
pride.
Years. Well, it was just like people are going to give me a fucking hard time.
That's it.
So, that's like, it. Towards the end, I was eating bacon at home.
Not telling anyone.
But then, like, buying bacon, then you've got to eat it all, though. If you buy a pack of bacon, you can't leave it in
destroy
the fridge.
Evidence.
You've got to eat it all.
Oh, God, that's sordid.
Just near the end. And then I sort of thought,
this is bleak. Just doing a full pack of bacon on your own.
Yeah.
Wafting the smell out the window so no one can...
It was bacon that I'd really missed.
Yeah.
So that was the thing that...
That's what most people say. It's like, I was vegetarian, then I cracked and had a bacon sandwich.
So then I had a year where I was eating fish, and then I went, fuck it.
Yeah. It's grim, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just boring, that's it. It's just going to a restaurant, especially going to a nice restaurant, and having risotto... Every time. Yeah. There's only so many risottos you can have.
It is, that's bad. It's better now than it used to be. I think the way around it is to make sure that that you appreciate the animal sacrifice.
That's not good enough.
It is. So
just
if
to go,
you,
thanks, pig.
If I think like leaving at meat behind is, you know, having some meat and then not eating it is disrespectful, I think.
Now you eat leftover meat. That's your compromise.
I won't leave any. If I'm eating meat, I respect the animals. But I also realise that you're not saving any animals by being a vegetarian.
No, you're not.
Because they won't exist. The fish will. The fish will exist. But all the other animals just won't exist. Because it's not like the farmer's going to go, well, we haven't sold enough meat this week. Well, we're just going to let that cow... go and live in that field.
Have a good life.
They will just go, well, let's kill that cow and we won't have so many cows next year.
Oh, God.
So it doesn't
Should
say...
Should we go for a burger?
It doesn't say... I think if you want... I very much... There's a lot of vegetarian and vegan comedians, and I think there's... I think, you know, it's a... I understand the motivation behind it because I was vegetarian for a long time.
I hate... no,
but I hate
vegans. I find it really hard to be a vegetarian, and I feel like I'm being a really good guy if I'm being a vegetarian, and then you meet a vegan and they're like, oh, I'm a vegan. And it's like, oh, fuck you. Oh, you eat cheese. Oh. I'm like, don't judge me. Because it's hard to be a vegan. There's a lot of comedian vegans.
There's a lot of them.
Why is that?
Because the same thing, they're all trying to show off to each other. It becomes a war of attrition.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one's done it, and they go, well, I've got to do it now, I've got to stop eating. Then one will go, I'm just eating fruit that's fallen off trees.
Yeah, that's it.
I'm just eating vegetables that have grown in the clefts of my own body.
Yeah.
And I'm not planting anything in there. The seed has to fall in there.
Just lick.
And if it falls and grows in there, and I know it's not going to sustain, I will eat that.
Just lick sweat.
I wonder how long you could survive just eating parts of yourself. I mean, not by cutting anything off.
No, that's a documentary I'd watch.
Just by sort of scraping skin, bogies. Hair. I mean, it's not so good for you. Well, you got hair on your body. You could shave that off, eat that.
Toenails.
I eat my fingernails.
Yeah.
Are we gonna
say poo-poo?
I think you could try, but I don't think... I'm not sure that it would have any nutritional value. I think that's the basic problem with poo. I think you'd have to be very strict to say I'm only going to drink my own wee as well, but that could be part of it. of this strip.
Imagine if you become that comedian.
That's what I'm going to become. I'm going to become the comedian that only eats stuff off his own body. Occasionally, you might have to go, I've got to lose a finger because I'm going to die.
Oh, you're going to start eating yourself.
Well, you might have to eat the. You might have to eat a finger or something.
There's the whole.
Yeah, but I don't use that much anymore, so I could get rid of that.
Yeah. Protein.
Yeah, it's gristly though, isn't it?
Oh God. This is very bleak. Yeah. 7 months.
7 months, you think you'd survive?
Yeah.
That lady's going, she didn't know she's this off. Was going to be the date that she was going on. She thought she'd come to Miss UK. And there she is. Are you all right? Let's go in the loo.
She's going, God, they haven't talked about movie mistakes once. I'm leaving.
I think she thought this is a good time to go to the loo, or maybe just thought I'm leaving to give that. So let's get started on this new lifestyle.
She's gone to munch on her own.
Yeah, she's gone to.
She's gone for a snack. Gross.
Well, ladies have an extra, you know, an extra every month. There's a little. What?
Oh.
That's a lot. There's a lot of iron.
I thought you were
going to
say milk. I thought you were going to say milk. You generally went there before milk. Well, what's wrong with you?
I think it would be irresponsible for a mother to take this diet. I mean, you'd have to be a mother to have to be lactating, and then you'd be.
Oh yeah, okay.
And then you'd be drinking the baby's milk, and also I think be emaciated and die. I don't know. I don't think you'd last very long, but you'd have moral superiority over the vegans, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it'd be one in the eye for Sarah Pascoe. So there's always that.
Yeah. Anyway, it's interesting. Would a vegan eat their own? Would a vegan eat their own bogies or their own?
Yeah, good question.
Yeah, would they?
Yeah,
because that's been produced by an animal or their own semen.
Yeah. Yeah, Michael Legg. Would you drink your own jizz?
Would a vegan having sex with another vegan? Would they just have to? You know, say no.
No, sorry.
Sorry, at this point,
you're an animal.
I can take
vegans are allowed contact with living things, aren't they?
They're not allowed to take any produce. So a vegan can't get pregnant because you can't.
Not allowed.
That's still eating it. That's still a certain ingestion, isn't it?
I mean, I'm not sure that's how it works.
I think it is.
That's it?
I think that's the vegan you
Them's
have
the
to
rules.
Be
Them's
to
the
beat
rules.
The other ones. If that's what you're worried about.
I'm
but I would say...
Should we give it a year and see?
Let's see how we look. Let's do it to October. You can come back and be my first guest in the new series. See how we both look.
Beautiful. I'm not game for it.
Good. It's a good question, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was. Was that how you ever tried sushi? Is that where that
came? That's how it started. That's how it started.
That's the best response to that question's ever had.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a good one. I don't ask this one enough. I think this will take us even further. Do you ever worry that you've already lived your life and are now in a care home without Alzheimer's disease and what you perceive as reality is just a distorted memory of the first time this happened? I would prefer a yes or no answer.
I mean, if it is yes...
Yeah.
It's not bad, is it? Like, this is pretty cool for a... If I'm just, you know...
Yeah, do you think that you get the highlights of that? If you're in that situation, do you think you relive everything? Or do you think you relive the good... Because I'm Sorry. Flattered that you've chosen this moment. That's
I know,
the,
yeah. That's what this, I'm saying. This is clearly an important moment for me.
It is.
Well, it's the moment I decided to stop ingesting jizz. Of course I'd come back to this moment. It's why I ended up in a care home. Because of following all the rules that we just made.
This is in 2 weeks' time.
Should have eaten. He's just sending a message from the teacher. Don't listen to the guy. So what? Sorry, I'm in a care home reliving my life again.
Well, you know, like
head.
When my grandma was like 101 years old, she would, you know, she couldn't remember anything, but she would sometimes remember her dad or something like that and have memories of that sort of thing. And you get that idea. You know, there are people who obviously are...
Yeah, I'd like to think if I was doing that, I'd remember myself, but with hair. I'd like remember. I'd go back and remember all the scenes, but I'd have a full head of hair. It'd be great. Like, I think that's
but
the
you might
thing.
Have a full head of hair. You can't see your own hair, can you, from where you're
Oh, that's a tragedy. So I'm an old man head. With a full head of hair who's dreaming about being a bald man in his 30s who drinks his own jizz.
You might have a, what am I t- you might have a full head of hair. In the memory, you're not. You can't see your own head. You don't get a third-person memory, do you? It's not like a TV show where you go back your memories and the camera's over there looking at it. From your perspective, your memory is from inside your own eyes, and you haven't touched your hair or looked in the mirror, so you don't know.
I have looked. Do you not have not looked in the mirror?
During this conversation.
Oh, right.
So okay. You might have a full head of hair.
Imagine if I just did.
Yeah.
This is like the bit in Bill and Ted when they can start, but then you did go back and now you've got a gun.
Yeah.
Imagine if... No, anyway. That's not so great a question.
I mean, it's not as good as if you ever tried sushi. You would think... I just love the idea of that, someone coming up with that as a question. That's from MarshallJonesJr.com. He's bothered to write that down. He thought, yeah.
He's got that's a good question.
Some people won't have tried sushi.
No. Do you think when you end up in an old people home, though, it'll be a bit like your kind of uni days again? Because you're all in a dorm and you're kind of fucking around. It's kind of what I'd like to think. It's like,
yeah, it's not. It's, I tell you,
a lot of them are single again.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a chance. Well, no, they are, though, aren't they? Because that's why they're in the home.
There's an element
of... Kind of get
of,
a chance of, like, should we go again?
There's an element of camaraderie in it, I would say. I don't know if I've talked about this before on this podcast. I went to see my grandma a few times.
Yeah.
She was in a hospice in Wells. So every time I went back to see my parents, we'd, you know, Christmas, we'd go and see her.
Yeah.
And, but what there was two floors. There was a lift that went up two floors. And one time we got in the lift and we thought we pressed button two, but we'd obviously pressed button one.
Yeah.
And my grandma's ward was quite nice and light, and you went in and it was, and everyone was quite friendly, and some people were able to have conversations with you.
Yeah.
And on floor one, though, it was just, ah! It was absolutely terrible. You're walking down.
I thought you were going to say wall-to-wall fucking.
It was wall-to-wall. It felt like it was darker. It felt like the lights were flickering. I'm sure that's not happened. That didn't happen. But it was literally just walking down the corridor going, they were so unhappy.
Oh God!
And it just made you see that, because you want it all to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is all love, but it's not.
So, did you get the phone call where they said we've moved her to Ward One? It was like, oh no!
It was so nice to realise we were on the, because both the floor, the corridors looked exactly the same.
Yeah.
So we walked right down to the end, and as only one got to the end, that we realised it wasn't the right one.
Right.
And it was then nice to go up and see just my happily. Alzheimer's disease grandma who didn't know who I was or anything.
Yeah, so ignorance is bliss.
Yeah, so it's.
I often wish I didn't know who you were.
I don't mind you not knowing. It was. It's a very odd. It's very odd to. My grandma coped with it really well because she was for years she would get by. She had a boy.
She had
a boyfriend.
Did she?
Yeah. So she got like a toy boy. He was like. 10, she was 95 and he was 80.
In the home?
No, this was before the home.
Oh, right.
But like he would help her a bit, but then she would go, oh, we'd be at a party and I'd go to her. And she'd go, well, we know this young man, don't we, Ken? And I'd go, yeah, you do know my grandma, I'm your grandson, you know. But she was quite clever about finding a way to, to cover herself. But it's a horrible, never grow old. Tony Blair was right.
Is that what he said?
He said, didn't he say, if the Tories get in, don't grow old, don't be... Oh, Kinnock, was it? same bloke, innit? Yeah. Anyone who's not Jeremy Corbyn, am I right? Yeah.
Might as
well be Margaret Thatcher, eh? Might as well be Hitler. They probably know what's happened by now in the future, that Jeremy Corbyn is still...
Still clinging on.
He'll still be there.
I just don't know. I voted for him. Did you vote for him?
No, I didn't have a vote. I'm going to vote this time.
You are?
Yeah, I paid £25.
Are you going to vote again? Well, is this...
I prefer not to say, but I think I've made my...
Right, okay.
I think I've probably... I mean, it's sort of weird that you feel you can't... I mean, I like him, and I'd like him to be... I'd like the Labour Party to encompass all the people it encompasses, and I'd like people like him to be in the Labour Party.
But
I don't want him to be the leader of the Labour Party.
Okay.
And but it's weird if you say, because even if you just mention that, you know, you get a lot of shit, which I also don't like, because I think, you know, but you both ways as well, I think, to be fair.
What is weird is from the moment he got in, more than any other leader of a party in my lifetime, every kind of power that be has conspired to ridicule and get rid of him.
Yeah.
So it's clear that the establishment doesn't like having people like him in charge of parties. Now, admittedly, he's proven that he's not very capable of being in charge of a party, but it's very interesting to see the reaction to somebody like him getting that position.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's about. I'm not really sure it's about that. I think we absolutely need someone who's going to, you know, turn politics around and change the way it is.
Yeah.
But I just think it's not now. Is not the time. We're really in this incredibly dangerous situation, thanks to all the idiots who don't live in London. hi there, everyone. How you doing? you know, I think it's an incredibly dangerous time we're in.
Yeah.
Oh, especially if now, you know, by the time this Trump might be the president of the United States, in which case,
yes.
I'm just going on the fact that we'll all be dead by the time this goes out, so it doesn't matter what I say now.
Oh, that's okay then.
The people in the room are not enjoying it, but the people in the future.
It does feel like that's the only way this year can end now, is with Trump becoming president.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like that's 2016's logical conclusion. It'd be really weird if this film has a happy ending. Like, it's already the bleakest. It just feels like, why wouldn't Trump become president in 2016?
I think he's going to.
Yeah.
I do think he's going to, because I think it's because people miss. It's the same as Farage. It's, you know, in a way, it's the same as Corbyn, though. I don't think Corbyn and Farage are in any way the same.
No.
But it's the similar thing, because people are trying to protest.
Yeah.
And so people have made this protest vote about Brexit, which is a sort of punch in their own face and might destabilise Europe and cause nuclear war, especially even without Trump, but definitely with Trump. Not definitely, but, you know, probably. But then, you know, but Trump is the same thing. It's all these guys going, yeah. I mean, it's the last kick, in the same way that ISIS is the last kick of religion. It really is. It's a past thing. They're all a past thing that really we've got past, and it's their last kick against it. So the way to it happened with Christianity in Europe, you know, a few hundred years ago, and it happens with as things change. The perceived guardians of America, white middle class men or white men, suddenly feel that they're being challenged, which, you know, they aren't really, but they should be in any case. And so then they react against that. They'll all vote. And I don't think Hillary's got the support, which maybe Bernie thingy Saunders might, Colonel Saunders might have had it, money because of the free chicken and stuff. Yeah. Could have done that.
Colonel Saunders would probably stand a good chance in the US election. Like, if they turned him out as a candidate, I bet he'd get a good turnout.
But now I think everything's changed, because I don't think, you know, even if Trump doesn't win it, they won't. They've learned from this all the way. And it's, you know, it's Michael Gove saying that thing about the experts, which, you know, no one cares about experts anymore. He obviously realised that was the kind of
trick. Watching someone like Gove play that trick was like, oh God.
But, you know, he knows that people don't trust experts. So to say that is like getting on board with that to get the votes.
Yeah.
Rather than going, well, actually, we probably do need
experts. Probably should trust experts.
To make things run properly. So it's now just about getting votes.
Yeah.
And so if people think, oh, if I say a load of stupid Katie Hopkins shit, I'll become the President of the United States, then someone will get it, won't they? Someone worse than Trump will get it.
Yeah.
So we're fucked. And it's all down to the people who voted for Brexit. So that's. I hope you're happy with yourself. I know there's some of you in here.
Do you play that game on like trains and buses and things where it's like, who's Brexit, who's Remain?
My wife is really. My wife does. My wife is so furious about it.
Yeah.
So I mean, she won't. She won't. She's got members of her family and friends too. That she won't that's talk it. To.
Yeah. And now I do. I sit in coffee shops. I was doing it today. Sit in coffee shops. I look around and I think. Your Remain, your Brexit, your Brexit. And even when someone cut me up yesterday, and I honked my horn, and I thought, he's a fucking Brexit. That guy is Brexit. I was extra angry with him, because I just knew he'd voted Brexit.
Yeah.
So it's crazy.
Yeah, we're living in horrible times. prejudice in both directions. Yeah. I mean, the day after it, I think, you know, the day after the result, I think I was walking my daughter through the park, and there was loads of guys, old guys, playing, you know, green lawn bowls.
Brexit.
But I was basically saying to my daughter, these are the guys who've wrecked your future. And I almost wanted to shout at them as and tell them that's what they
need. Come and tell my daughter what
you've
done. And
then I kind of thought, they might not have done, Rich. Don't judge people because
they did it. They did. Yeah, they did. Oh, it's horrible. Here's a question. It happened. Do you want to keep talking about this?
Well, we can do. I mean, I'm aware that it's dull for the the people in the future, is all I'm saying. You have much worse troubles to worry about.
Yeah.
They're looking back with nostalgia.
What were they complaining about? They did great back then. Never mind.
No. Let's. it's exciting, isn't it? Yeah. It's exciting times to be alive in, right? Never knowing. You're going to get to the end of your next tube journey. So it's one way or the other. And the excitement is you won't know whether it was just someone who was crazy or a terrorist or what. You know, that's, you never find out who killed you. Is it just a nut?
Oh my God, this has really taken a turn.
Is it just a nut game?
I mean,
is it an accident? Was someone having a laugh that got out of hand? Or was it a proper terrorist? That's all we have to worry about. I love the way the room...
Was it a party popper that went wrong?
Like the news is like, when it's they go, oh, it's a terrorist, and then it's not a terrorist, it's like, it's all right, it wasn't a terrorist.
It was just a crazy guy. It was just a crazy guy, it's fine.
What wasn't a terrorist.
What a fuck. Genuinely,
that is much more scary.
Yeah.
That's just someone can be crazy.
Yeah. No, it's fine, it was just a crazy guy. Thank God he didn't have links. Oh, poor relief. He didn't have links. He just liked pipe bombs. Great. Fine.
Let's talk about you.
Finally.
Yeah, let's talk about you. We'll go back to you. So you were the 2015 Best Newcomer Perrier Foster's Award nominee.
I was nominated for Newcomer, yeah.
Yeah, Best Newcomer.
My 10th year of going up to the fringe. Yeah. 35 years old. I've been going since 2005. And I got a Newcomer nomination. Yes!
Did it feel weird to get... I mean, did it feel like...
I was embarrassed. It's always nice to get a nomination, but I was like, I really hope I don't win because it would have been really awful. People would have gone, really? That guy? And you don't want to be that guy. He's like, you know. So I was really relieved when a genuine newcomer won, like Sophie Hagen won, and she's a genuine newcomer and is building a career.
Yeah.
You know, so. You know, whereas I, you know, I've had my, you know, I've had my career. I've written on Movie Mistakes.
Exactly.
2, 3, and 4. What more could I have? You know, it was weird.
It's weird. But no, I mean, it was obviously a good show. You had the 7th best joke of the Edinburgh Fringe that year,
which was really. They published that in the Sun, right. And like, so my nan rang me, and that's for me. That my nan was like, "I've made it," though.
Yeah.
Because I had a joke that was in the Sun.
Yeah.
But they're weird, those lists, because they don't ask you whether they can use your joke, and then they just publish your joke, and it goes, for 2 days, it goes around the newspapers, and then it ruins that joke for the rest of Edinburgh. Yeah. And because it's your best joke, you put it in a bit of the show where you know you need a laugh, and then that stops working, so it kind of fucks you for the final week, because a lot of people have heard it, only like in Edinburgh, because it's such a bubble.
But because I think Dan Antopolsky won it 1 year, you get £1,500 or something, you get some money in a cup and stuff if you win. I mean, it's the idea of judging...
A joke.
All the things said at the Edinburgh Fringe, and then doing a top 10 list of the, and then coming in going, 7th.
I've got the 7th best joke. Like, it's so underwhelming. You know Tom Parry. I'm the guy who wrote the 7th best joke of 2015.
It's good.
Do you want to hear the joke?
Yeah. They won't laugh. Cause
they won't laugh now. No, because it's no. And in fact, genuinely, I had to do this thing on radio the other day, and they said, "You wrote the 7th best joke of last year. What was it?" And so, like, when you tell it in that context, no one laughs. They go, "Oh, okay." It's such a horrible exchange.
Make sure nobody laughs at it. Let's all listen to it.
God, just
only laugh if you think it is definitely in the top 7 jokes of 2015. It's quite good. You might laugh at it, but be honest with yourself, though. Is it as good as where does a bird put its sexual organs? This is never, just to give you some context,
right.
Where does a bird leave its sexual organs when it goes to a nightclub in the cloaca room has never been in any top 10 lists.
Didn't get the nod.
No, didn't. It hasn't been in any shows either, apart from this. So maybe I'll get this 2016. I'm going to go to Edinburgh to just do that joke. It's going to be called the Cloaca Room. Is the name going to be the name of the show? People are coming.
58 minutes of build up. 58 minutes of this is going to be great, guys.
There'll be 58 minutes of me explaining what a cloaca is.
Yeah.
And what a cloakroom is.
Yeah.
To anyone who is too young to remember what a cloakroom is and the what cloaks are. And then so we all know what the facts about those things are. So.
You could do 20 minutes of the Justin's Room trick of being in the audience going, oh, the joke that this guy's going to tell is brilliant. He's really good. And then
pop back,
you come.
Put on a red nose.
Tell the joke.
Tell the joke. And then people go, that, but hey, Rich, the punchline was the title of the show. Given that.
The problem with you is this is actually something that you would do. This is genuine. You'll be crowdfunded for this in 2 months' time.
What was your joke? I'm sorry to have set the standard so high with the cloaca room. The cloaca room. It's like cloak room. It's the joke. They'd probably need 15 minutes after the joke to just explain why it was why it worked.
Yeah. That's a good question. Where do you? At what point? 45? At the 40-minute lull?
Yeah, with 40-minute lull.
Wait for the 40-minute lull to do the joke of the show.
Yeah. Do your joke. No, remember what we said.
Amazing builder. I dare you not to laugh at this joke, motherfuckers. Hey guys. There's an old saying about. Come on.
Funny already.
There's an old saying about the weather, isn't there? Red sky at night, shepherd's delight. Blue sky at night, day. Yes, they had to laugh. Blue sky at night, day. In at number 7. Number 7 with a bullet. But all joking aside, the best thing I had was Tim Vine, who's one of my absolute comedy heroes, texted me that morning and said, I love that joke.
It is good.
And it was like, for him to say that to me was like, that's it.
It's a good joke because also it's like a lot of people have had a go at getting a joke out of that.
Yeah.
So it's impressed. That's what, actually to find the new joke in something that's well trodden.
It makes it the 7th best. I don't know what won actually.
No one remembers that guy.
No one remembers that guy. They all talk about number 7.
Blue sky.
Yeah.
I would say, it's not. That's technically not a night, though, is it? So there's.
Oh.
And you direct shows, though.
Mm.
So you're not going to Edinburgh this year, but
you. Do you know what I just did? I just directed Russ Abbott. Do you remember Russ Abbott?
I do. What an atmosphere.
Yeah. He was really good. Still really funny.
What's he doing? Is he doing a show in Edinburgh?
They were pitching the Russ Abbott sketch show again.
Right.
And so he was doing like his old character and stuff, so I got to direct him. So that was like my first proper directed job.
Right.
And then outside of that, I direct Edinburgh shows. So I have like all the fun of going to Edinburgh, but then you can fuck off after the first 8 days.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice. And also, like, you can talk. Like, what I like about directing is, like, I had a meeting this morning with Max and Ivan, who are very funny and very good writers and stuff. But I said, like, I think what you need there is, like, a campfire scene with loads of jokes in it. Bye! And then they have to write a campfire, and they have to do all the heavy listing, and you just make suggestions and then disappear.
Sure, sure.
So it's actually like a very lazy way to still do comedy.
Yeah, but you get asked by lots of different people to do it, so you must be.
Yeah, I like doing it. I really like doing it. And it's just a case of, like, again, it is just making sure that the people who you're working with get to where they want to go. It's not necessarily my taste, but, like, it's where they want to be.
Yeah.
So. That's it, really.
Yeah.
But I love it. So I think it's the thing I enjoy the most, actually. I think I enjoy it more than performing. Because there's a different satisfaction when you're at the back of a room and you watch something that you've done that and you see it work.
Yeah.
And you hear the audience laugh, but they don't know that you did it. You have, like, a different kind of pride.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're on stage going, hey, guys, red sky at night, guys. I mean, what's that all about? Like, you're working for it really hard and you don't get to enjoy it as much, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas that thing of being at the back is like, twice as satisfying.
Sure. Do you think, I was talking to David Cross about this, big, I mean, like coming back and doing, you know, doing a sketch show in his 50s now Bob Odenkirk. Do you think it's something that you'll keep working at with the pappies? Will that keep going? Or do you think you'll get to an age where it suddenly, and I'm saying this as a 49-year-old man who's still doing this shit, so I've got no where to go with this myself. But do you think it's, and who just about to do a sketch show, but is it something that you think will carry on between the
I think so. We kind of made a commitment to each other about 5 years ago. We were like, let's keep working together because we still really love doing it, so we think let's find out. Mm-hmm. But we haven't really written a new sketch for about 4 years,
really.
And so we've got this prop bag with all our props in for those sketches. And Crosby left it in the back of his wife's car, and we got a phone call from Crosby yesterday that said, "My car's been nicked."
Right,
Charlie's car's been nicked. But the worst news is, our props bag's in it. And it's like, and my first reaction was, shit, dude, are we going to have to write new sketches? And he was like, I think so. And we genuinely had this big panic of like, what gigs have we got coming up? What can we do without the props? And then this morning they found the car and it had been moved and the props were still in it.
Yeah.
So, we're back on. We're back on board.
I thought the bad news was going to be they've stolen the car, but they took the props out and left them behind. So we still don't have to write any foot.
Yeah. No, it turns out there were roadworks and the roadworks people had just moved the car.
Oh, so, thank God.
Didn't steal the props. But I don't know. I think we'll keep working. I mean, I just think the best thing about comedy is not stopping doing it.
Yeah.
Because, like, the nicest thing about that is the people who you know get really successful, and that's really exciting. Because you can kind of go, oh, my friend's doing that now, and that's really exciting. And also, like, it just changes the way... When you first start, you're, like, obsessed with, like, I've got to try and be doing it, and, like, I really want to be doing it properly, and it's like a race of, like, ugh! And once that stops, you can just kind of go, oh, I love this. And it's like, that's all you do then. So
yeah. Well, that's
I don't think we'll ever stop working together. It's the plan.
Matthew said that he
did it?
Said another six months, he said.
6 months?
Yeah.
6 months. Then,
I don't know if I was meant to tell you, but, you know, it's going out on a podcast and everything, so you'd have found out eventually.
Yeah. It's funny because we're all doing our solo stuff, and it's kind of like there's this sweet spot right between... You don't want the thing that they're doing to be a disaster. You don't want it to be too good. There's like a real sweet spot in the middle where you go, it's fine.
Yeah.
And that's the what you want. So like whenever Matthew works on something, I go and watch it. And it's like, oh, thank God, it's fine. Like, it's not fantastic.
Yeah.
And it's not terrible. It's fine. And like, that's what I always look for. It's like... If he did something that was fantastic, I'd get worried. I'd think, oh no, I've lost him. But at the moment, he always does stuff that's fine.
Yeah, well, you never know. You never know who's going to...
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's it, you never know. I'm convinced Ben, who's like... He's the best actor of the group. And I think he auditions a lot, but I always think he's one audition away from, like, he could just fuck off and he could go to LA or he could get a big series, because he's a very funny actor. And I keep on having to train myself for how I'll be when that happens. How did you deal with your partner being more successful?
Very badly. I think it's really difficult. But like, there were times when we weren't working together by the time things took off. So it's like slightly different.
Yeah.
But we went to the Just for Laughs festival in 97, 98, I think it was. It was certainly a couple of
years. Doing solo stuff?
No, together and solo.
Right.
But we went 1 year and we did this TV show for Channel 5 out there. We were hosting the coverage of it. And then they wanted us to go back the next year. And I hated the Just for Laughs festival.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I didn't want to do it again. And I was writing a play and it was going to get in the way of that. But Stu was like being kind of, you know, courted by all the American people.
Yeah.
So it was like a double whammy of, like, I don't want to go and do this thing, but if I don't do it, Stu won't be invited to the festival. Yeah. But if I do go, Stu's being courted by all these people. So it's like me going to do something I didn't want to do in order to basically give Stu a chance to be a solo star in America.
So did you go?
Yeah.
But, was it horrible?
I still didn't like it. It was... I just don't like the. I've been once on my own as well. I just think it's just. I don't. It doesn't suit me because I'm not a networker and I kind of hate all that sort of stuff. Yeah. But you know, I'm sort of. You know, it's interesting because lots of the people I've worked with have gone on to be incredibly successful.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I think it's the long game as well, and it's also about how you view yourself. So it makes you come to a better place for yourself. I think there were certainly times when. Both ways, I think, you know, where there's been times where when Stu went through a bit of a wilderness period and I'd made some money doing the Al Murray stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he kept on going on about, you know, Stu, rich ones, rich making loads of money and I'm not making lots of money. And so, you know, it works both ways. And you were aware that over the long period of time, things go up and down. So
yeah.
But also, I think you have to have that, you know, the happiness for other people, really.
That's it.
Because if you don't, you're gonna be destroyed.
You go mental.
You're never gonna be the person at the top all the time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that I think as I got older, and you know, now I'm suddenly really old, as we discussed back then.
Yeah, that's
and then you go fucking hell, you know, it's kind of over really anyway. So it's I'm essentially treading water to the end. I mean, I've kind of got 15 years of a career. You know, if I retire at 65, I've got 15 years left. Fucking hell.
Long time,
so, you know, that's this man, the last 10 years. Has gone ridiculously quickly.
Yeah.
So, you know, the chances of anything happening for me are smallish. So, you know, you become comfortable with yourself and what you want, and you realise other things are more important.
I think that's it. I think you find out your own. I think you're really good at what you're happy doing, and that's when you're best.
Yeah.
So, like, I've got a really good test for me that it holds me back, really, but I get terrible head sweats when I'm out of my comfort zone.
Right.
Like, we, and sometimes Pappy's got asked a few years ago, we got asked to do quite a few talking head shows, like Channel 4's 50 Funniest Moments, and I hate those. I didn't want to do them.
Yeah.
And we arrived, and from the moment they put me in front of camera, I would just start sweating profusely. They'd have to keep stopping recording to sponge me down. And it's like, it's the worst thing, because as soon as they start pointing it out, the more I sweat. It's like they go, can we just stop? Tom's got a little bit. And I'm like, oh God. And the other two are kind of like going, oh no, Tom's freaking out. Like, you know, like they can tell.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know that if I got a panel show, like I've done a few tryouts for them, but like, I know if I went on Mock the Week, say, it would just be like this horrific head sweat thing. So like, it's quite nice because I now tell myself, only do things that won't make you sweat. So like, I kind of do stuff that doesn't make me sweat, and it makes me, I feel comfortable then.
Yeah, you're not sweating today, I know.
Well, it's quite good actually, so I'm talking about sweating now, and it hasn't made me that sweaty, because normally it makes me...
I'm quite insulted that you're not sweating.
No, this is no thing for me. It's nice, because it means I'm comfortable doing it.
Does,
I actually thought I wouldn't know until just before I came out. I thought I'd be in the wings, and you'll know if it's going to be one of those gigs. Terrible.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. But I think also you look at other people and other groups and other sketch groups and other double acts and the way that things have gone for them, and you kind of think, well, that isn't necessarily the person I would have expected to be. You know, often
just don't know yet.
Yeah, so you don't know what's going. There's all that luck in everything you do, and it is whether you get the part or if you get the, you know, you're in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and genuinely, and this is a weird thing that I never thought I'd consider, but like when I started doing comedy, I loved doing it. Mainly because I loved working with my mates fucking around, and it was like we were doing this really fun thing. I never thought to myself, I want to be on telly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, never. So when we got a sitcom, we did two seasons of this sitcom on BBC Three that got an awful lot of hatred. And it was like real, like hashtag, if you look at hashtag baddles, well, actually, it's become a porn hashtag now. So I don't, once you skim past all the porn, there's like, we got a lot of abuse. And I realised very quickly, I was like, oh, I didn't want to be on telly. I never started because I wanted to be famous. I don't want to be recognised. And that's weird because a lot of people get into comedy because they love doing comedy and not because they want to be famous. And then the byproduct is fame. So like people like John Richardson, who's a really good friend of mine, we go to the pub every Christmas. And it's like, recently we've had to start choosing pubs that he won't get recognised in, or he has to wear his baseball cap. And it's like, he never wanted that.
No.
But it's like a byproduct of doing well at comedy.
Yeah.
And the fame's a weird side effect.
Yeah.
I'd hate to be famous, you know.
Yeah, me too, God.
Thank God you ducked it.
Just don't know how I managed to avoid. No, but that's what I mean, like, especially once you get to have it, you know, when you're 25 or whatever, you think that would be amazing, and it isn't. But also once you're suddenly with a family, and that's why I just think it'd be so awful not be able to go to do things.
Yeah.
It just would break my heart, because then you think, you know, that your kids are then confused.
Yeah.
And it's just odd. So, you know,
it's Mr. Tumble's life, mate.
It is. That's Mr. He has all the money in the world. He's sitting in his little in this house with the unicorn, the zebra coming out the wall, where I imagine he really lives. Not many fans of Justin's house. I mean, I know it's on early, but just have a baby. You'll be up in time to see it. Don't you worry. I think we're going to have to let you go in a sec because you've got to get, you're dashing off to do another show.
Yes.
We should try and do something funny before you go.
Yeah, it got pretty deep, didn't it?
That's traditional. That's fine.
Oh, is that what normally happens?
Yeah. I'm very,
it was fun at the start, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's funny.
So once then, I told my joke, it really nosedived.
I've manipulated you like a ventriloquist dummy.
Oh no! Oh no! Am I going to jerk you off to finish?
Yeah.
At the end of, is that how it always ends?
That's
how. Oh no!
I'll ask you one more question. We'll have to hope it's a good one.
There
was one I wanted to ask you. No, I'm not going to ask that. I've also asked that backstage.
Have you had a nice time?
Yeah, no, it's been all right. Do you think it's been in the top 7 podcasts we've done? I think it's been relaxed. I'm not sweating. It's usually very hot up here.
Yeah.
Next time you come on, I'm going to put the heating on really. Okay. Oh, hold on. Let me see if I've got a newer one. Oh dear. I'm such an idiot. What is the word? No, I'm not going to ask that one. Have you ever been attacked by an animal?
That's what we're going with.
That's what we're going with. I'm taking a risk.
I used to run a gig at my cousin's hotel and he had a tiny lap dog called Peanut.
Yeah.
And Peanut was used to go for me. And we had a free bar after the gig and I got very drunk and got home and Peanut attacked me. And I locked myself in the bathroom and slept in the bathroom. When I woke up the next day, I'd written a poem. Right. I have no recollection of writing. That the first two lines it said, "Fuck off, Peanut." And then it said, "They don't understand us. And they never will." And then the rest, it was just incomprehensible. And I have no recollection of writing it.
I like it because the first line's very much against Peanut, but then the second line, you're...
suddenly he's on board. And I no reckon, I've been drinking scotch all night. "Fuck off, Peanut. They don't understand us." It's kind of like exactly the way a guy goes when he's on whiskey. Like, "Fuck off. Oh, come here, mate." it genuinely started go for me.
Yeah.
And I had to lock myself in the bathroom to get away from him. And then I wrote this fetching poem to it. So yeah, the time I did get attacked by an animal, it brought out, he was my muse.
That's good. Good to see.
Yeah.
Red sky at night, you're on Mars.
No, come on!
It's gone almost as well. I think that is.
Yeah, that's number 5.
I think it might be 8th. I think in
put
second
it into your
of
show.
The red
do two sky. Shows in that show. You take them and see if you can beat me.
I'll do. I'm taking to Edinburgh this year.
Well, no,
going to be the cloaca room and red sky in Mars.
No, that's the joke. That's the joke. There's an old saying about the weather, isn't there? Red sky at night, shepherd's delight.
Yeah.
Red sky at day, you're on Mars.
Yeah.
Mars.
Mars a day helps you work, rest and play. Should have ended at the dog attack thing. I don't know why. And you know, in a way, we might do.
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, give it up to Tom Barry.
Thank you, Roy.
Been listening to Richard Herring's The Square Theatre Podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest Tom Parry, or Tom Pappy, one of the two, I can never remember. The music is by Pest. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide, to the Leicester Square Theatre, and GoFastTheStripe.com for all their assistance. Thank you to Orange Mark. Thank you to George, the incompetent sound man. Our producer is Ben Walker. It's a Fuzz, GoFastTheStripe, and Sky Potato Production. Those are the 3 production houses behind this.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods
for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.